Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks Sunday, July 17th, 2016. This is episode 1306. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by Adobe Marketing Cloud, introducing audio white papers for marketing. White papers read aloud to keep you up to date with the latest trends and technologies. Listen today by searching Audio White Papers for Marketing on iTunes or visit adobe.com for more information. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality, Pokemon Go, and anything else with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, something you'd like to get some help with. That's what I'm here for. 8888-ASK-LEO. And there's so much, as always, to talk about in the tech world. Sometimes it collides with what's going on in the, I'm going to put this in air quotes, real world, as it has over the last week with so many world events like the coup in Turkey. It's interesting because, of course, as always, the coup plotters, whoever they might be, and there's some evidence it might have been Erdogan himself. I don't know what I'm not going to comment on that, but whoever planned it, of course, as always, when there's a coup, first thing you do, you go to the radio and TV stations, you shut them down. But this time, you also shut down Facebook and Twitter. You shut down the social networks. They didn't do it very effectively, and that's why Erdogan was able to use Apple's FaceTime to speak to the people. Why we saw so much video over Facebook Live and Twitter, both of which do live video. Now YouTube's about to make YouTube Live available to everybody that has a YouTube app on their smartphone. Really is changing how we perceive world events, isn't it? And how we get the information directly, in many cases, from the actors, from people in the middle of the fray. And that's so very different, of course, now in Baton Rouge. Another tragedy. It just never ends. But again, live video from the scene from not reporters. And, you know, you can tell I'm looking at CNN right now, and they've got the vertical video because somebody's shooting it with their smartphone. And it's interesting. There's a battle. You know, the big battles rage often over the smallest things. Is it GIF or JIF? Is that dress blue or gold? You know, the stupidest little things we fight, and we've been fighting over GIF and GIF for years now. And there's another battle over vertical versus horizontal. And the folks at Snapchat and Meerkat and Periscope have all kind of favored the natural format for shooting video with a smartphone and watching it. That's, I guess, most important. Vertical. So you hold the phone up as you would as if you were making a phone call and take video. And they don't encourage you to turn it necessarily. Although I think one of them was at Periscope started saying, turn it sideways, will you? But people don't watch it sideways. They watch it, if they're watching it on their phone, they watch it vertically. So it makes sense to have that barn door. It's I guess we're just going to have to get used to it instead of, you know, being purists and fighting it. Right now, trending on Facebook, a live stream from Baton Rouge. I'm curious if when news breaks, It used to be you'd immediately turn on the TV, right, or the radio, turn on the news station on the TV or the radio and hear what's happening. I think that's changed a little bit, certainly with younger people. I find myself even going to Twitter. And now Facebook wants a position doing that, too, to be the home of breaking news. And it's challenging for Facebook and Twitter because they don't have editorial teams. So they don't have really mechanisms for reviewing what's going on. And no, they just see a lot of traffic. And then a human has to quickly say, well, what's going on? Is this news? Is this gratuitous violence or sex? Or what is it? And if, you know, because in the latter case, they'll block it. But if it's news, however gory or horrific, they won't. But somebody's making an editorial judgment there, and it's not as it would be with a CNN or your news station, your news radio station. It's not somebody trained, however little or much, journalist or editorial team, but just some employee. Does that matter? Maybe not. Maybe we're just, you know, we're getting direct access to it. It's really shaken up the news media, I can tell you. The way the news media thinks about their job and what their job is has changed dramatically from being a purveyor of what's going on, just the facts, ma'am, to an interpreter. And I don't think that's necessarily such a bad thing. But it does mean that we need to be educated, and I've lobbied this for years. Our children need to be educated. Not so much in fact gathering anymore. Used to be, remember, you'd memorize state capitals and the presidents of the United States. What's the point of memorizing state capitals if a quick Google search will deliver the answer in seconds? Do you need to know? I guess it's nice to have that in your brain, but do you need it in your brain? I think not. Much more important to teach kids how to figure out whether the source of the information they're getting is valid. That's a big one, isn't it? What the biases are, because they're not necessarily obvious, whether what you're hearing is factually true or not. And I think we especially need to know whether somebody's got an agenda. And agendas, if you have an agenda in a new media or old, usually is hidden. What's their agenda? What's their hidden agenda? What are they trying to get you to do? We need to bring our kids up in this kind of environment and teach them critical thinking, teach them to seek the hidden agenda, not to accept everything they read. And you see it too. I'll tell you, with we have a 13-year-old, and as a younger kid, if it was on the internet, he said, "Well, I saw it on the internet," and I had to explain. He had some very odd facts at his fingertips. And I said, "Michael, where'd you get that one from?" "Oh, I saw it on YouTube." And then you have the conversation, don't you? Well, that doesn't mean it's real. He's getting wise, though. You know, that was maybe when he was in fourth grade or fifth grade. Now he's in eighth grade, and he's getting wise. He finally realized that a YouTube favorite of his, guy named McJugger Nuggets. You know, you've probably seen the videos. They're hugely viral of a father and son fighting. And in one of them, I remember seeing it. I'll be honest with you. And here I am, you know, the cynical old internet journalist. I didn't immediately realize it was fake. The father decides that his layabout son is spending too much time on his Xbox. The kid comes in and says, "Where's my Xbox? Where's the games?" They're out in the backyard. The father's about to mow them over with his riding mower. The kid throws a tantrum. And the first time I saw it, I admit, and, you know, it's being filmed by his kid brother who's chortling. And they're good actors. They're good enough that it fooled me and fooled Michael. In fact, for the longest time, we had a debate. "No, that's not." I said, "That's fake. That's not real. That's an ad." He said, no, that's real. Well, he's finally realized, partly because McJugger Nuggets has continued on his juggernaut, and finally he killed his father. It's a prank, it's a joke. He didn't really, in fact, his father's in on it, but that's the last, and that was the last one. I think it was his way of saying, "I don't want to do this anymore." By then Michael had figured out it was fake. In a way, that was a good lesson, right? Something that seemed so real. For me, too. Something that seemed so real. Now, I view things, I see a video or I see a picture on the internet, I'm immediately skeptical. Are you? I know not all of you are, because I still get the emails. You won't believe what happened. And it's, you know, I get it from family members. I have to send a note out saying, you might want to, where do you send people? Snopes, right? Snopes is S-N-O-P-E-S. It's a great website where they debunk internet myths that spread so far. And sometimes you see the same myth over and over. That's the lesson I think we all, our kids have to learn, but we have to learn too. A little critical thinking, more important than ever. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk high tech right after this. The large bird taken off with a baby. Clearly faked. You know, one of the reasons this came up, and I didn't want to really talk about it and glorify it, but there's an Australian group that's been making fake videos trying to convince mainstream media to take the videos. And they say, oh, it's just, you know, we're just demonstrating how gullible mainstream media is. And yeah, that's something, but they're also trolling mainstream media, aren't they? And they're going to great lengths to make these videos look real, like the guy being chased by the bear. What was it, skier? Is this the original? Yeah, this is the original. So this is being made by an Australian group to fool media. And they carry it. She's singing Rihanna. This uploaded in April. It's had 8 million views. So now they... video editor is going to edit in something. But you can do it so well now that you might not notice. It's kind of well done, isn't it? Now, if you saw that and you were the news director at KABC and you were looking for some good viral video to close the nightly newscast with, would you go with it? You might.
I've become quite skeptical.
I know, me too.
Working in a newsroom and... yeah.
Good. Well, I hope they're becoming quite skeptical. This was an Australian group that was doing all of this. And then they finally went public saying, we were... But look at all the stories saying, is it real? Is it a hoax? And Snopes finally has the...
It's better to not be, it's better to be right than first, I guess is the motto that we've worked on. In the,
yeah, but you know what? No.
They're trying to
no,
be first.
No, you may say that, but I don't think that's really.
Well, no, I know.
They may say that. They pay lip service.
Jump on things that are totally false, and then they have to.
I don't think it matters, really, as long as you get, you know.
Hence
I mean,
the.
Well, they fall for stuff. It's embarrassing.
Long. And the
something
too low.
Wrong. But no, you know, that's pretty embarrassing. But people,
just a little.
Most of the time, it's not so obvious. It's so bad, right? We too low.
Bang.
That was
out.
Terrible. I felt really.
Poor Tori Campbell.
When you know her?
No. I'm not personally.
But you feel for her, though, because we've all been kind of in that boat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We were watching during the break, Kim Schaffer and I were watching the famous, we now know, hoax video of the snowboarder being chased by a bear. And it was well done. I mean, it was subtle, too. They didn't, like, have the bear come up and bite her or anything. They just, it was in the distance. It was, you know, believable. But you say, Kim, having worked for years in radio news, that you would not have fallen for that?
Well, I can't say whether I would have or not. I'm just saying, working in the newsroom, we double and triple and quadruple check.
You do
sources.
Now, don't you?
Yeah, because too many people have been bitten by the just wanting to get on that story first and too fast.
Well, I think that's responsible of you. Could.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced, though, that there's a huge penalty. There seems to be more of a reward for getting it first than the penalty for getting it wrong.
I don't know if there's any kind of penalty. It's just embarrassment.
It's embarrassing, but people forget it, and you move on, and you know, and they and what you want, of course, is for people to think, well, if you know, a news breaks, we'll have it first, right? And I think there's a lot of pressure on both traditional news media and the new media.
It's just amazing with like the Twitters how fast stuff comes out now and how you can.
You can't keep up if you. That's why I think if you're traditional media, what you should look at is not trying to break news because you can't. You're not going to beat Twitter. When Prince died, where did I hear about it? On Twitter.
I saw it on Facebook or Twitter. Yeah.
When Bowie
same with
died,
Michael Jackson.
And when Michael Jackson,
ago.
And even Michael Jackson years ago.
And it was TMZ. It was TMZ that had tweeted it that I saw that.
I think there's still a kind of pressure to be first, even if you're wrong. And now what they do is they say, well, it could be a hoax, but look at this bear chasing the snowboarder. In fact, I was just doing a Google search of it, and most of the news media that published that video said real or fake. Could it be a hoax? But they still published it. Right?
Well, and every celebrity that's died this year... It's a hoax.
That's the one you don't want to get wrong because that's really embarrassing.
Yeah.
And kind of hurtful.
Comes out and says, no,
yeah, kind of hurtful. Yeah. Real or fake? We don't know. But Paul McCartney, thank God, is still alive.
Yes, he is.
That's the bottom line there. So you've been collecting callers, I see.
Yeah, like Pokemon.
Yeah. Got to catch them all. I got a very angry note from a listener, and I apologize, sir. He says, I love you. I love the show. But please, no more Pokemon Go. But this happens. Of course, you know, when Apple comes out with a new phone, I get the same emails. No more. Let's not talk about this anymore. This is how it is in the news biz, right? The big story, you talk about it.
Yeah.
Till there's the next big story. And I think you can't deny that Pokemon Go is a story.
It's huge.
I'm driving in today. Usually I walk. I twisted my ankle playing Pokemon Go.
Weren't paying attention to where you were going.
Got boo-boos all over me. Actually, the irony of it is I had been playing Pokemon Go, walking briskly into work yesterday. And I said, no, I got to pay attention. Put it away. And then I fell.
Just don't fall off the Segway.
But I think it was related. I think it was like, well, as I'm putting away the phone not to play Pokemon Go, I'm paying even less attention. I don't know. Anyway, I blame Pokemon Go for my injuries. So I'm driving in because I can't walk today. And everywhere. And it's very distinctive. First of all, people playing the game tend to be in packs, which is, I think, one of the cool things. It's social. And there's a distinctive look where they're kind of carrying their phone out in front of them. And you know, first just waiting for a Pokemon to show up, and then that typical vertical flick, and they stop to do that, and then they go on. And it's very distinctive. If you're in New York, did you see the video in Central Park?
I did not.
A couple of nights ago, you could find it on YouTube. A couple of nights ago, apparently, you know, there's all kinds, there's hundreds of Pokemon. It's one of the rarer ones. Somebody in Central Park, somebody shouts, whatever, here's a Venonat! Over here, and throngs, hundreds of people. The video shows a guy jumping out of his car in the street, stops the car, jumps out, and goes, runs chasing. Hundreds of people chasing this rare Pokemon. And you tell me that that's not a news story? That's not a phenomenon? I don't know if it's good or bad. I think personally it's good because people are walking, they're talking, they're out at night. It's like it used to be. Remember the old days? People go out at night, talk, walk, the promenade. It's kind of like that again. Admittedly, we're staring at our phones more, but you got to take what you can get. Let's take a caller. You've been preparing them.
Yes, and Jacob in Arkansas is a gamer and wants to play a game with his friend. It's not Pokemon Go, thank God.
Social gaming is very big. Hi, Jacob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Oh, Jacob. Nice to talk to you. How old are you, Jacob?
11.
And what game do you want to play with your buddy?
Ark Survival Evolved.
Oh, Evolve. Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's where you, you're in a world with dinosaurs.
Yes.
Yeah, and then you kind of want, it's an open world. You're wandering around, and then you try to tame one, right, and evolve them. It's a little bit like Pokemon Go with dinosaurs. In a much more rich and vivid game. Is it a multiplayer? It is, isn't it?
Yes. You can join people's server or you can create your own and people can join yours.
Cool. So how can I help you?
Well, I have my PC. My friend has an Xbox One.
Ah.
Do we both want to play with each other? Like, do we have to have the same console or something, or is it...
So this is there are games that you can play on the Xbox One and the PC. I don't know if Evolve is one of them. Maybe somebody in the chat room will know. I've played it on my Xbox One. It's called Survival Evolved. Is it out yet, or is it still in beta? I think it's not officially released yet, is it?
I'm not sure.
I was playing the beta version when it came out. So the reason some games let you do this and some don't, and the reason is people on a PC with a keyboard and mouse on some games like Call of Duty have an advantage over people using a game controller. And it may be the other way with driving games and things like that. And so it's often in multiplayer online games, it's often a question about whether they're going to allow that. Because now I would say Survival Evolved is a good example of a game where I think you wouldn't have an advantage either way. Be kind of like Minecraft. But then it's a question of the programmers who wrote the game making it, you know, their servers cross-platform. So the answer is I don't know, but I will look for you, Jacob. Okay. Unless it specifically shows a server that you both can join, it probably isn't. You know, Minecraft, you know that. Minecraft's like that. You play it on the PC, you can only play PC servers. Mm-hmm. And you play it on the Xbox, you have to join the Realm servers, and you can't be both. You can't be both. You can only be one or the other. By the way, Microsoft wants to change that. They're going to make Minecraft completely cross-platform. And most Xbox games eventually will be. That's kind of controversial, actually. Some people were mad about that. But I like the idea that it doesn't matter if you're playing on PC or Xbox. Looks like you... I don't know. I'm going to have to do some research for you, Jacob, and see if I can find out. Keep listening, okay? Mm-hmm. We'll come back after the break, and I'll find out. My chat room... The fabulous chat room is working on it. If you want to be in the chat room, go to our website, techguylabs.com, and the address and the information is there. Can we play together? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my good friends at Texture. I kind of feel like they're my friends because I use the Texture app on vacation. I love magazines. Who doesn't love magazines? Texture is basically, the easiest way to describe it, is Netflix for magazines. If you go to Texture, TEXTURE.com/twit, you can get a free trial and kind of see for yourself. On your phone, on your tablet, the idea is Texture lets you read your favorite magazines for one low monthly fee. So you can, just like you binge on movies with Netflix, you can binge on magazines with Texture. National Geographic and Wired, Rolling Stone and Esquire, Sports Illustrated. The complete magazine, by the way, on the newsstand, every page, plus bonus content you can't put in a magazine, like video, plus back issues. So you favorite the magazines you want. You get on an airplane, they're already downloaded. It's just awesome. If you want to branch out and try other magazines, they have, you know, dozens and dozens. They have an editorial staff that'll pick top stories and new and noteworthy sections. Texture makes it really easy to find stuff you care about. There's always something great to read when you have Texture, and I really like that. And, you know, a tablet or a phone is a great way to read magazines. The pictures are more vibrant. I used to subscribe to the National Geographic when the kids were little. For about the price of that subscription, now I get the National Geographic on my tablet. It's beautiful. Those pictures pop. They're all there. And all these other magazines. I'm a big fan. I know you will be. That's why we've arranged a free trial for you. Visit texture.com/twit and try your free trial. You could choose the basic $10 a month plan, or if you want every magazine they offer, the premium for $15 a month. That's still a lot cheaper than buying the magazines in the newsstand or subscribing. I love it. texture.com/twit. Try it free right now. Well, thanks to the chat room. Bad news for Jacob and his buddy. They want to play a new game, which is a fun game called Ark Survival Evolved, in which you get to ride dinosaurs. You play a caveman. It's what we call a MMORPG, a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, or MMORPG. And you can play it on Steam, and I think Mac or PC. Mac or Windows. And then you can also play it on your console, Xbox or PlayStation. But I am special in our chat room found the sad words. I think he found it on Steam. That you cannot play what we call cross-platform. In other words, they have a version for PCs and Macs, and they have a version, you know, for Steam, and they have a version for consoles. And even the updates are not in sync. So, bad news, Jacob. Currently, you can't do that. Here's the quote. Ark will not be cross-platform. Each version of the game will have their own official servers and receive the content updates at different times, as well as have some technical differences, so cross-platform would not be possible. But as I mentioned, Microsoft really wants to make it possible to play Xbox games on PCs and vice versa. And in fact, you kind of can now with the new Windows 10 update for the Xbox. You have the ability to stream a game from an Xbox to your PC. That's not quite the same. But I think it's Microsoft's intent, since they are the Windows company and the Xbox company, that most games can be played on both platforms. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you want to talk about this or anything else on your mind. I guess I get some window cleaner. I can't read the screen here. Somebody's been spitting on my phone. Richard in West L.A., you're next. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk.
Good to talk to you.
About 5 or 6 years ago, I created a video lasting maybe about 11 minutes. I uploaded it to Vikasa, and I've been trying to, and I burned a copy. I've been trying to burn another one, but all I'm getting is a picture, a still picture of the first scene in my video.
Is that from Picasa or from the DVD that you burned?
No, Picasa. I've tried to duplicate the DVD, and I don't quite know why, but I can't do it. I've tried everything.
Yeah.
I think you often recommend Handbrake.
Yeah.
For some reason, I couldn't download that. There was a lot of stuff going on there. I'll try that again. But
make sure you get it from the original site. When I hear a lot of stuff going on, that worries me. You know, a lot of people go to sites like download.com and Softpedia to download free software. Don't. Get it from the original company, in this case, handbrake.fr. H-A-N-D,
that's
what I missed. H-A-N-D-B-R-A-K-E, like a handbrake in a car, .fr. Right. It's a French company. Because what happens if you go to these download sites, it does look like there's a lot of other stuff going on, including their own download wrapper, which often installs adware on your system prior to installing the program you wanted. So
I saw all that stuff.
You were smart. You were right. Yeah, handbrake.fr. What that does is you put the DVD in. Is it a DVD you could look at in a DVD player?
Yes.
Like any DVD. So that's a true DVD as opposed to a data disk. You know, you can burn CDs and DVDs as just like a hard drive with files on it. That's right. What we call a data disk. But you made a video disk that could be played on any DVD player.
Right. I hadn't seen it in a while. I tried it out last night and it worked fine in my player.
Okay, as long as you can still use it. Sometimes, you know, by the way, people assume that DVDs and CDs last forever. They don't. They can corrode, believe it or not. The metal substrate can corrode and they can be unreadable in a matter of a few years. So an old DVD may be unreadable. But if you were able to play it in your player, Handbrake will be able to rip it. And probably a better choice than Picasa. You remember what happened is that Google bought this company, Picasa, wonderful company. They made a very nice photo organization and kind of simple editing program. They bought it. They started giving it away. Kudos to Google. And they created a web interface called Picasa Web. And then when the Google Plus frenzy occurred at the company, they decided to kill it and kind of incorporate it into Google Plus and Google Photos. So in theory, all of your content should still be available at photos.google.com. Have you looked?
No, haven't tried that.
So in theory, I think it just automatically transferred your Picasa Web stuff over. So there's another place to look. It might still be there.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
If it's a video, it should show up as a video. You can store videos there.
When I've tried to play it on Picasa, it works fine.
Good.
You click on it and
good.
It works fine.
Good.
You have that ability to send it through Gmail.
If you're playing it locally on Picasa, that means it's on your hard drive.
Right.
So you have a copy. You don't need Handbrake. You already have a copy on your hard drive. So in Picasa,
I can't burn another copy.
Well, maybe not from Picasa, but you have a copy of the original AVI or MOV or whatever that video file was on your hard drive. And Picasa, the program, is playing it back. I apologize. I thought you had uploaded it and you were trying to get it off the upload site. But it's still on your hard drive if you're playing it with Picasa.
Hmm. So, and where would I find that, though? Then?
Well, I don't remember. It's probably a right-click and show folder, or there's some way to go to the original file in the Picasa menu structure. Look for that. Almost certainly there's a way to see the original file. And then that original file, that's what you should burn, because that's all you'd be making with Handbrake, is you'd be kind of recreating that original file in a lesser quality. So you want the original, ideally. Then don't burn it with Picasa, because they're out of business. You know, they closed that down, and maybe some of the features are gone. You could, but there are many burning programs you can get on Windows PCs. There's a huge number. And just burn it with that. Yeah, it's still there. If you can see it in the program, it's still there. Gadget Hog, who still remembers how Picasa works, says right click the entry and choose locate from the pop-up menu, and that will actually locate the original file that you're playing back. Note where it is, because that's where Picasa's putting everything. There's probably a folder. It might be in My Videos, the traditional Windows folder, or it might be Picasa created its own folder structure. That's unknown. You know, that can vary. But note where it is. When you right-click it and choose Locate, you're going to find it somewhere. Tom in New Hampshire. Hello, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I got to push this button, too. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Leo. There you are. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. All right. Love your show. Love your Twit network.
Thank you.
I download the shows every week.
That's wonderful. That's our podcast network. TWIT stands for This Week in Tech at TWIT.TV. What can I do for you?
Well, I just got on Amazon Prime Day this week the tap. I won't say the regular word. I don't want to trigger everybody's speakers.
You mean an Echo?
World.
An Amazon Echo?
Yes.
You call it Pata.
Well, this is called the Tap. How's that?
Mm. The Echo Tap, yeah. I love the Echo Tap. I have an Echo Dot in my bedroom, and I have it hooked up to nice speakers, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah, it went on sale. I had saved almost enough money for it, and then it went on sale. I'm like, okay, I'll get the Tap now.
It was Prime Day, right? They had a deal.
Right. It was 30% off.
Wow, good deal.
Anyway.
They really should be selling that for less, because it's just an amazing portal to buying all sorts of stuff from Amazon.
Yes, it is.
You can tell it. You know, I'm off and I'm brushing my teeth and I run out of toothpaste and I go, Echo, buy some toothpaste. And it'll go, okay, I see this toothpaste. Would you like that? Yeah, buy that. And then it's amazing. It's like a personal assistant in my bedroom. Hey, let's take a break. We got to take a break because, that's life. Commercials, you know.
Yes.
Somebody's got to pay the bills here. But when we come back, let's talk a little more about so anything that you say about the Amazon Tap applies to the Dot and the Echo as well.
Right.
They're all the same family.
I'm going to ask about the skills.
Okay, we'll talk about skills when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Gadget Hog, for doing that. He's very nice, boy. Yes. Yeah, imagine. What do they say? There's like millions of people own these things. It's kind of cool. Kind of cool platform. Pretty. I would say in a few, 5 years, 10 years, probably 10 years, it'll be just commonplace that you'll just talk to your house and tell it to do things, or your car, or your whatever, your phone. It's just going to be kind of the way it is. We'll wonder, how did we survive without that? How do we, man, you had to type things in, do all that work. Let me see if this works. Echo, what is the capital of South Dakota?
South Dakota's capital city is Pierre.
So I don't need to memorize that anymore, right? Echo, who was the 16th president of the United States?
The 16th U.S. president was Abraham Lincoln.
See, I don't have to remember that stuff anymore. Echo, can you name the presidents of the United States in order?
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
That'd be kind of cool. But you don't really need that, do you? There's other reasons to do that. It's good for kids to do memorization and stuff like that. Yeah, I think this is going to be commonplace. Okay. Gotta catch 'em all. Echo, what is the square root of 64?
The square root of 64 is 8.
Echo, what is the square root of negative 1?
The square root of minus 1 is I.
Wow. It even does irrational numbers. Imaginary numbers. Sorry. John, thank you. Echo, what is the square root of pi?
The square root of pi is roughly 1.7724539.
Echo, what is pi?
The number pi is a mathematical constant, the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter, commonly approximated as 3.14159.
Echo, can you tell me pi to 25 digits?
Probably
not.
No. I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
That'd be kind of fun. Echo, when does Star Trek come out?
The movie Star Trek 11 was released in 2009.
No, that's not the one I'm talking about. Echo, when does the new Star Trek movie come out?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question I heard.
She's only half smart, right? Echo, what is 17 divided by 0?
17 divided by 0 is undefined.
See? She's good at math. What is the name of the movie? I don't even know. See, in theory, you shouldn't have to know that, right? Echo, name the U.S. presidents in order.
Sorry, I didn't understand the question I heard.
Yeah, she can't do that. Echo, when does Star Trek Beyond come out?
The movie Star Trek Beyond is released in 2016.
That's not helpful. All right, we're talking about the Amazon Echo. I'm careful to say, as you should be too, Tom, the word Alexa, because that's her name. Right. And when you say that out loud, she responds and she's scary.
Mom? But
mine, I've called Echo, which means that every time we talk about it, she responds.
Yeah, mine won't do that because it's just a tap. It's only the button you have to press.
Ah, so yeah, that's right. The tap, you actually have to press the button. That's right, yeah.
Right. So
you want to know about skills.
I heard you playing with Austin. Yeah, that was funny.
I was saying at the beginning of the show, you don't really need to know the presidents in order anymore or the state capitals. You can just ask.
You can Google anything.
You can Google anything, or you can ask Echo, and she knows. Echo, who is the 12th president of the United States? I don't even know that one. You know,
I can't find the answer to the question.
I was asking too many things.
Yeah, I think
Echo, who was the 12th president of the United States?
The 12th U.S. president was Zachary Taylor.
I didn't know that.
I'm sure. I knew the one you did before, the 16th one. I knew that one.
The 16th one, everybody knows that one.
Yeah, that one I
chose that one so that we would know if she was right. Because if she'd said Zachary Taylor, then we'd go, mm-mm-mm.
Wait a minute, that's wrong.
So Echo's an interesting story because you can add skills to the Echo.
Right.
The tap. It's the same.
The phone.
You can even do it, by the way, there's an Echo app. You could do it to the app.
That's what I've been doing.
You can download software and put it on a Raspberry Pi. I mean, Amazon's decided to make this a kind of a platform that can be everywhere. And I imagine we'll see it in cars and speakers and other things as well. So it's fairly easy to write a skill. In fact, I've been meaning to do this. Anybody with some programming skill can use Amazon's platform. They have a very interesting cloud-based platform for Echo skills, and they're not hard to write. They're limited in the way you can implement them. And, of course, if you look at the Alexa app, you'll see the – oops, I said the word. If you look at the app – sorry. You'll see the skills are many, many pages. But the newest thing they did is you don't have to anymore turn a skill on in the app. You can actually turn it on by talking to Echo.
But that's the trick. You have to know what the skill is.
But you have to know what the skill is, exactly.
But that's what I want to ask. I want to see, is there a web page that's regularly updated with the app? Because on the iPhone, you swipe past the app, then you got to tap into it, read the then enable it, then go back and hope you're I'm visually impaired, so I can't just quickly scan down the
Yeah.
Is there a website that where they are regularly publishing in a list? And then go in later and enable it, either the app or on the speaker.
Can't you do that in the Amazon? I think you can go to the Amazon.com site and look in devices and find the skills there. But here's a website. I don't know. You know, it's an
I went looking on the Amazon page recently. I couldn't find it anywhere.
Oh, that's annoying. Well, here's a website.
You can see the speakers, but you can't see the skills.
Here's a website. I don't think it's run by Amazon, so there would be no guarantee that they keep it up to date, but it's up to date, at least as far as I can tell, for right now. It's called AlexaSkillsStore.com, AlexaSkillsStore.com. Okay. And you can search, which is what you want. They have them broken down into categories. They also have best, and they have popular. So, you know, one of the skills I really love is Jeopardy. And you're right. You have to know how to ask.
I love that.
Isn't it fun? You get six questions a day. Yeah.
Yeah, that and the 20 questions. I played that yesterday. I beat it twice.
It's pretty good, isn't it? It's pretty good, though. I mean, it knows how to do it. There's a fun one that's called the 7-Minute Workout. We'll walk you through a workout.
And that one for the Apple TV as well.
Yeah. So they're really expanding quite quickly. And the fact that. You're right. The fact that you can add a skill with voice. See, I would imagine, you tell me, but I would imagine if you're blind, the Echo is an amazing thing.
Well, I've just been playing with it since I got it Friday.
Oh, it's brand new for you. Yeah.
What's that? Yeah. So, it's, I mean, I've been hearing you talk about it and other people talk about it. Like, that's it. I'm going to try it and I'll figure I'll go in small and do the tap first and see if I like it. You know, it's a small investment. Oh.
Let me just try something.
All right.
Echo, add the pizza facts skill.
I've added pizza facts skill to your shopping list.
Okay. Shopping list? Well, now I'm going to get pizza. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was not what I expected. So no. You can see we've got a ways to go. But on the other hand, I would think for a blind user, given that the whole interaction can be done with voice in your ears, this would be a phenomenal technology. Yeah.
And do you know that you can ask her, with the
Echo,
when you can ask her the battery percentage?
Yes. If you have a Tesla, you can ask the battery percentage of your car. You can control charging.
Of the actual tap. I pressed the button on the tap. I said, what's the battery level? And she told me.
You can also, if you have a device for your OBD2 port, I use something called the Automatic. They're a sponsor of our shows.
Well, I hope I don't have that, being blind.
you shouldn't be driving. I understand.
No, I shouldn't.
But if you have the Automatic, you put that in your OBD2 port, and now I can ask my car how much gas is left, which is kind of cool. There's a lot of little things. If you have a Nest thermostat, you can turn the heat up and down. And I would imagine as a blind person, that would be – there's some really – you know, as it gets more and more capable, there'd be some really useful
– finding all these skills. You know, I mean, you like you said, you got like, 20 pages of them now. How do you find the one you want?
There are, I think, now almost 1,000. I mean, I think there are a huge number of skills. So this website is the closest thing I've found to
– Amazon Skill Store.
Alexa Skill Store, yeah.
Okay. All right.
And it's AlexaSkillStore.com.
All right. I'll look at that later.
Yeah. And you have a screen reader, I guess.
Yes, I have system access.
It looks like a pretty accessible site. It looks like mostly just text.
That's good.
So you can see there's communications, education, entertainment, finance, games, home automation.
You click on each one, and then it gives you the description, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And it tells you, which is good, how you add the skill and then what the syntax for the skill is.
But that's important.
So here's one called Learn Simple Multiplication and Division. You know, I wonder if this is an Amazon site because there's an enable button right on the site. Or maybe it just links to
the skill, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm enabling this skill, Learn Simple Multiplication and Division. Mm-hmm. And then the way you would invoke the skill is written down here. It says, and I'll try this. So this is skills enabled. Echo, open simple multiplication division. Now it's thinking.
Let's learn about simple multiplication and division. I will ask you about 5 questions. Try to get as many right as you can.
Kids love
Let's
this.
Let's begin.
I mean, this
what is 16 divided by 4?
4.
That answer is correct. Your score is 1. What is 21?
So this is like the Jeopardy. I'll stop it now.
Right.
But this
That's
is like...
You don't have to keep pressing the button on the tab. Just keep it open and while you're...
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I think you'd like the speech one. But the nice thing about the tap is it's very... You don't have to worry about people like me saying the word. We have numerous users of the Amazon Echo who get mad at me regularly because I trigger... They're listening to the radio show. Often they're listening to... you can listen to all of our shows on the Echo using TuneIn. And often they're listening to our shows. And in the middle of the show, the show will stop and the Echo will start doing things.
Right, that's it.
That's not a fun, that's a bad prank.
No, I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
I've been waiting all day to hear it.
How do you like the voice? You wish you could change the voice, or is that okay?
No, I like the voice is pretty cool, I think. I think the voice is right on. It's pretty clear.
It's very good for a synthesized voice, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's very good. I wonder where they got it. I don't know of any other one that sound anything close to that.
I just noticed on my Android device, the Google Maps voice has become much better as well.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that, but I'm an iPhone user, so I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, I bet Google Maps on the iPhone would also sound better. I don't think it uses Siri's voice. I think that we're getting, I mentioned this during the break, I think we're close. I think within the next decade, the idea of just talking to your house or your office will become commonplace, and we'll just get used to, that's how we operate. Not everything, you'll still type to write things and... Do Facebook.
Or dictation, like with the iPhone. My wife and I, we both use dictation a lot on our iPhone.
I love that.
We're both terrible typers, and she has terrible palsy. I have terrible palsy, and it's just hard to type on the little screen.
Well, even if I have a hard... Even if
everybody,
you're...
Everybody, I guess.
Everybody has a hard time. Those screens are tiny, and I have giant fingers.
No, they're not tiny, but...
Tiny enough. They're smaller. The keys are smaller than my fingers. It's nice talking to you. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Have a great one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take a break for your local news. There's lots of it, sad to say. But we'll be right back with more toy talk after this. What is... Echo, what is the equation to determine the air volume in a subwoofer enclosure? She's not going to know that.
I can't find the answer
She's
to the question.
She's not going to know that. What are you, nuts?
That sounds like Echo doesn't know about Google.
Echo needs to know about Google.
It's an easy answer.
Yeah.
Google Incorporated, the internet technology business.
See? She does.
That's all she knows.
Echo, do you know about the NSA?
The National Security Agency, NSA, the military intelligence agency governed by the United States Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm. Echo, is the NSA listening?
Nice. Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. That's really her. Wah, wah. That's her no comment.
She cannot comment.
That is
She's
a no.
She's not at liberty to discuss
That is a
matters.
No comment. Because otherwise she'd say, I don't know what you're talking about.
That would be a more sassy answer. I'd like that.
I don't really care. Hey, NSA analyst. Nice to see you. You know why I don't care? I'm on the freaking radio all the time.
Right.
The NSA doesn't have to go far to find out what I'm thinking.
Not at
Just
all.
Turn on twit.tv, baby. And I have no filter, so... If I were up to no good, unless it's a carefully planned disguise as a person, a goofball who has no filter. But in reality, I'm a Soviet sleeper cell waiting to be triggered. But if I were a Soviet sleeper cell waiting to be triggered, would I say that I was a Soviet sleeper cell waiting to be triggered? Or would that be a great ruse, a way to hide the fact that I, in fact, am a Soviet sleeper cell waiting to be hidden.
Trigger. And every guest that comes in here is an FBI or NSA agent. Because they figured you out.
Just call me comrade. You wondered why I talk with Russian accent so good. Because it is my native language. Здравствуйте, как поживаете, товарищ? I wish she could do a translation. Maybe she can. Echo, how do you say good morning in French?
I can't pronounce that, but I've written the translation for you.
Yeah. See, Google can pronounce it. Echo, the red hawk flies it done.
It is done by Kim Burrell from Spotify.
What? We have triggered thermonuclear war. These last sounds you hear will be slushy music from Spotify.
Oh Lord, I need.
This is nice.
Oh Lord, I need.
Echo, stop. Echo, what is a copyright violation?
Sorry, I don't know the answer to
your
question.
I know you don't, obviously. Echo, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start.
Super Alexa mode, activated. Starting reactors, online. Enabling advanced systems, online. Raising dongers, error. Dongers missing, aborting.
Wow.
What the what?
I just thought it was a Nintendo thing.
What is a donger?
Dongle.
Echo, what is a donger?
Sorry, I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, headgear, augmented reality, Pokemon Go. Anything on your mind, if it has a chip in it, if it's about technology, I like to talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We've been talking about the kind of the amazing Amazon Echo, this device. But Amazon's not even really the leader in this, are they? I mean, they're the first to put this device in our houses that we can talk to, but we've been talking to our phones for a while with Microsoft with Cortana and Apple with Siri. And, of course, Google has, their little thing that you say and that talks to you. And do you use it is my question. I think one of the things is, you know, we have these capabilities. I have to laugh. I have a good friend who, whenever we're, you know, like I ask, what's showing downtown or I wonder if there's music nearby or, you know, is there a restaurant, anything. She has this kind of sad and persistent faith in Siri. And so she'll ask her. And it's hard for me not to laugh because it's invariably useless, wrong. And so after a while, most people would just go, well, I'm not going to ask that anymore. Eventually that happens with all of these because none of them are perfect. And all you have to do is get a few useless answers before you kind of go, okay, I'm not going to ask anymore. Or do you? I'm curious if there's anybody out there who uses these voice recognition technologies regularly. There's some cool things, you know. I mean, Google has a translate program that allows you to have real-time audio conversations with people in different languages. It's kind of amazing. I mean, if 30 years ago you'd say, well, look at this. I have this little pocket device. I speak in English and it comes out in French. And then the French person speaks in French and it comes out in English. And we can have a conversation in very close to real time. It's very fast. That would be science fiction. It is science fiction. And we just get used to it. Oh, yeah, I can do that. Skype has that capability now, too. Microsoft's put that into Skype where you could have kind of instantaneous real-time translation. What's interesting, I mean, if you haven't used that recently, at first it was pretty bad. It was almost laughably, the translations were almost laughably bad. They've gotten much better. And I've had conversations in Chinese, for instance, and in French, and I've asked the person I'm talking to, is that pretty idiomatic? Is that, does it sound like, you know, kind of robotic? In the past, you could understand it, but it wasn't how a normal person would talk. It's become more and more natural and idiomatic over time. That's pretty impressive. Pretty amazing. Douglas Adams in his Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, wonderful comedy science fiction novel series. Actually, it was a radio show first, then a novel, then a movie. Invented something called the Babel fish, which is a weird live fish that you would put in your ear. And then it would do exactly this. It would do simultaneous translation so you could understand any language. We have it. It's called Google Translate. You can even aim the Translate app at a sign, turn on the camera, aim it at the sign, and it'll translate a sign into a new language. I've used that in Germany. It was amazing. It's kind of an incredible thing we have in our pockets, and yet we just kind of, take it for granted. Yeah, man, I got that. I don't use it that much, you know. I don't really need it that much. I just like, you know, if I say it louder, they understand. Chris, Miami, Florida. You're next. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hey, hang on a minute, Leo.
Come on over to the phone, Chris.
I want to get you off. Yeah, I'm off. I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm always good when I give you a call. You know.
You are such a happy person.
I am. Well, you got to be, right? I mean, what's the point of being miserable? You might as well dig a hole and get it over with.
Okay. I think, you know, I just saw Inside Out, the Pixar movie. There's a place for sadness in life.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are times if someone unfortunately passes on or loses a job. There are times, but I try to be upbeat 95 to 100% of the time.
Why not? Enjoy. Yeah. There's enough to sadden us. Hey, now let me ask you, because are you in Miami proper in the city?
No, I'm actually I'm outside. I'm on 79th Street in Biscayne. I'm in a little city called North Bay Village. We're an island community between Miami and North Bay and Miami Beach.
Do you see, and there's probably a lot of older people there, do you see people playing Pokemon Go in your neighborhood?
I see them everywhere. In fact, I was doing it for a while, and it made me nuts, so I gave up for a while.
Yeah. Our friend, Father Robert Ballasair, the digital Jesuit, had to give up the predecessor to this, Ingress, because he became addicted. He walked many, many miles playing that game. And he hasn't started Pokemon Go. He says, I know I'll become addicted again to it. I guess you do see people kind of compulsively playing it.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. And like you said, they always go in groups.
Isn't that weird? But I don't mind that because at least they're social. They're talking.
It's
a big step up from sitting in your boxer shorts playing Grand Theft Auto all night.
I don't know what that's like.
No,
I don't know what that's
like. I do. I do. What can I do for you, Chris?
Okay, so a good friend of mine the other day said, you know, he has iOS 10, and I said, well, I don't know how you have iOS 10 unless you're a public beta tester because it's not revealed until, I guess, coming out this fall.
Right.
And he says, why don't you get it? And I said, I've never done that before. Let me give Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I listen to Renee Ritchie, MacBreak Weekly. You know, I'm in on everything.
It's easy to do, and we've talked a lot about it. So Apple's started doing the same thing that Microsoft's been doing for a while, which is they call it public betas, where they offer anybody, you don't have to be a developer, the opportunity to test the next version of the operating system, as long as you understand it's pre-release, and so we'll have bugs. And the big thing with iOS 10 is some of your software will stop working. And you don't know ahead of time, to be honest, which will work, which didn't. For instance, Pokemon Go didn't work initially. Then they released a new version that fixed it. And that's the whole intent, isn't it? Yeah. Apple wants to put out these betas so that companies can fix their software so that when it does come out officially in September, one of the things that happens with iPhones is everybody almost universally updates, very much unlike the rest of the world with Windows and Android. People don't update instantly. But Apple has conditioned its users, do the update. Do it up.
Yeah.
So I've been playing with iOS 10. I don't use the iPhone day in, day out, so it wasn't a risky thing for me. It's not my daily, what we call daily driver. I'm an Android user. But I have, of course, an iPhone, and I use it a lot. I use it all the time. Mm-hmm. And I like iOS 10. I think it's going to be controversial. It's the biggest change to iOS in a long time. Some things are easy, people pleasers. The new messages lets you do giant icons and invisible ink and all sorts of fun things. They're playing catch up with Facebook Messenger and other WhatsApp and things, but it's well done and I like it. And of course, it only works with other people using iOS 10. So it really won't be that useful until it comes out globally in the fall.
Okay, I'll wait.
And then the other big, there are two other big differences. One is, and you've heard us talk about it if you've listened to MacBreak Weekly. Yep. The other big difference is notifications are very different. And I think this will be controversial. And they've also changed how the control center works, that thing you swipe up from the bottom. It's now two pages instead of one. And I don't mind that, but it's going to take some getting used to. I think it'll be a little controversial. I would not upgrade if it's your main phone because some things just won't work anymore, and you may want those things to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's, you know, on the other hand, a lot of people do it just because, well, hey, I want to be on the inside. I want to know what's coming around the corner, and then I can be the expert, and, you know, people can ask me, well, what do you do? And, of course, as you know, it's my business to do that. So I had to. I wouldn't say do it. I think you can. Oh, hey, it's 2 months. You can wait 2 months, right?
I can wait 2 months. Only 8 weeks.
I would wait two months, Chris, if I were you. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks for listening
to our shows.
Always.
I appreciate it. MacBreak Weekly, we do every Tuesday. That's at twit.tv/MBW. iOS Today, every Monday, twit.tv/iOS. Good shows if you like those things. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by, if you're interested in marketing, you know this is a vast moving, very fast moving subject these days. Keeping up can be challenging. Well, I got a really cool tool for you, the Adobe Marketing Cloud. They do these white papers that are really awesome. And what's nice is they've made them available as podcasts in audio. So if you search for audio white papers for marketing on iTunes, you'll see all of these. They're about half an hour. You can listen to them for free. You can download them, put them on your iPod, listen as you're going to work. If you're a marketing professional or a business owner or you just want to stay up to date on the latest marketing trends and technologies, you're going to love these audio white papers for marketing. You can go to iTunes and just search for audio white papers. You'll find it's easy to find. There are eight right now, and I'm sure there are more to come. You're covering things like the differences between interaction metrics, engagement metrics, and value metrics, and using those to help figure out which of your creative is working, or creating personalized content relevant to consumers using predictive analytics, creating a 360-degree view of each customer, no matter how or where they're interacting with your brand. These are things marketers care about. They're complicated. The internet has changed a lot of the way we do business. And this is about keeping you up on the latest. And it's free. And by the way, there's no sell in there. It's just good content. I like Adobe for doing this. Audio white papers for marketing. Search iTunes for audio white papers for marketing or visit adobe.com for more information. Audio white papers for marketing. We thank the Adobe Marketing Cloud for their support. All right, I probably shouldn't do this, but I really want to do this. Oh, Chris Marquardt, let's just make sure you work. Hi, Chris Marquardt.
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you, and you hear me? All is well.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, just fine. I had the web.
Roger.
Open, so it was kind of confusing.
Oh, is that going? Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's all good.
All right. Be with you in 20 or 10.
All right.
Thanks. Talking. See ya. I'm trying to decide whether I should. So this has Ubuntu on it. And this is the System 76 laptop. And that's what they design it for. And they have their own PPA and everything. But I use GNOME 3, and I don't think Ubuntu is the best OS for GNOME 3. They don't keep it up to date as much. Oh, yeah, you still have systemd, baby. I think you had it in 1404, didn't you, Archandra? Well, you'd have it in 1604. I'm thinking of putting, instead of Ubuntu, putting Antergos, which is a kind of nice Arch. I wonder if I could put BSD on here. I think I could. This is the problem with this is it's a 980M. I think BSD supports it. And Yeah, well, this is all Pulse Audio, System D. I think driver support's going to be a problem, and it's for one thing, it's the new kernel, the newest kernel. Was that 4.6? And OS X is not BSD based, really. It's got Darwin, but it's not a full BSD. We'll see. This is kind of a crazy experiment doing the BSD as my main desktop at home. It may not work, but thank you, Johnny. Mario. Thank you, Mario. Thank you, birthday boy. Thank you. So I'm right now just burning a USB key with Entergos. We shall see. It's kind of dumb to do it right before Twit, huh? I got 3 hours. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'd love to talk high tech with you. Answers to your questions, suggestions are welcome. Corrections, too. 8888, ask Leo. Let's go to Canada, Calgary, Alberta. Clinton on the line. Hi, Clinton.
Oh, hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Very well.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say there's been three people in my life that have changed my life for the better. My stepdad, Steve Jobs, and you.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. I'm deeply honored. I don't deserve it, but thank you. That's very nice.
Oh, yes, you do. Gosh, I don't know how the world's going to be when you move on. But
I ain't moving on yet. Please don't rush me out of here.
Oh, yeah.
So do you work in tech? Is that how I influenced you?
Pretty well much.
Yeah. I do know. I talk to people all the time who wanted to work in tech or, you know, were thinking about it and saw the old TV shows or whatever and said, yeah, I think I can do this. I think I can make this my career. And I do meet people like that from time to time. It's nice. It's gratifying.
Thank you. I've been self-employed for, I think almost 10 years now.
Nice.
Anyway, the reason why I'm calling you is that I've been playing around with Raspberry Pi and routers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've come up with a way so that, this goes back to you once did a show on know-how on how to get free HDMI TV or free high-definition TV.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, ever since I saw that show, I was kind of in awe about it, and I've been playing around with it with antennas and stuff for a long time now. And what I've done is that I have a minivan, right? Uh-huh. And in the minivan, it has a DVD player, and it has HDMI ports too, so you can plug in games and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up buying this ATSC converter and an $8 antenna off Amazon.
And so you're getting over-the-air. ATSC is the unencrypted over-the-air broadcasts, and I guess in Canada there's still a few of those, thank goodness. So you got the antenna and you got a receiver. Now what do you want to do, a media center?
I've just plugged it into my my minivan, and it works wonderful. Like there's six channels that broadcast in HD TV.
Nice.
And no matter where I go, anywhere in the city of Calgary, I always get them.
That's great. Don't watch while you're driving.
Well, no, you can't. Here's the thing, though, right? Is when the vehicle moves, right? You lose the signal.
I guess so. Well, really? Yeah. All right. Okay.
But as soon as the car is parked or whatever, it's
good.
They all come back. So
you want to use? You're saying your Raspberry Pi as a media center? Is that kind of your idea here?
Yeah. That's where it comes in. Basically, it's not necessarily a Raspberry Pi, but other devices, right?
By the way, the Raspberry Pi makes a pretty decent media center. It's not the, it's just a $35 computer, as yep. you know, but I'm telling everybody else that has, you know, pretty good capabilities, including HDMI, high def video out, so you can connect it directly to a TV. It doesn't have a video capture device, so you'd have to figure out some way to get video capture in there. And you'd probably want to run OSMC, the Open Source Media Center, which is designed for Raspberry Pi. And you could actually run that as your operating system. Father Robert demonstrated that yesterday on our new Screensavers episode. And it really is a nice, really, really great experience based on the old Xbox Media Center.
Yeah.
So there are certainly easy ways to do that. The issue, of course, is the video capture device, because there's no way to do that. But there are, if you do a search, you'll find lots of how-tos. It'll let you walk through it and put everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My question is though, could I load up the Raspberry Pis with that, with all that software?
Yeah.
And then resell it?
Sure.
Are you breaking laws? Or
no, not at all. Okay. So the Raspberry Pi, of course, you can resell because it's hardware and you can sell it, resell it.
Yeah.
There's no limit on
that. What about like the software that comes
with it? And then that's the beauty of open source software. You're more than welcome to do anything you want with it, including customize it and resell it. In fact, that's the business model in many respects for open source software. Open source software often is free. Operating systems like Linux and various open source programs like the OSMC, the Open Source Media Center, are free. The way companies, the incentive, or Ubuntu, the incentive for companies to do this is that they can make money selling services or selling integration or repackaging it. So it's absolutely fine and legal to make a media center using a Raspberry Pi. And once you've figured out all the details for yourself, that's exactly... You know, there are people who say, well, no, I'm going to do it myself because I can go online, follow the steps and do all that. And then there are people who say, hey, I just want to buy something ready-made. And that's completely not only legal, but that's the whole point, if you ask me, of open source software. Generally speaking, you want to put license information on somewhere. I might want to print out the license for OSMC if that's what you use. And give, if you're doing a manual, a paper manual, give that to people with it. But it's not required because the license is built into the software as well. Yeah, highly recommend it. And it's a fun project. Nice way to make money. You could drive around in your van selling media centers out of the back. 8888, nice to hear from you. Glad you're listening in Calgary. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite. Online backup, a great solution for anybody who's using a Mac or a PC. You know you have to have backup. I hope I'm not telling you something new. Backup is the only way to get your data back if disaster strikes, a fire, a flood, you accidentally throw stuff away. That happens more often than not. Or the real disaster these days, ransomware. You know, you get an email. About 95% of all phishing emails these days are ransomware. You get an email and says, here's your statement from last month from the bank, or, you know, a variety of things. You say, oh, yeah, you double click it. Don't ever, but you do open up that attachment. And now you get a message that says, hey, hi, how you doing? We just encrypted all the data on your hard drive. You want that back? You'll be sending us $300. Now, if you don't have a good backup, if you don't have Carbonite, you might panic at that point. But if you've got Carbonite, you go, you just get rid of the virus. Restore your data from Carbonite, and you're good to go. That's the beauty of a strong backup solution. Automatic, continuous, and off-site where it's safe from ransomware. Carbonite. Try it free. You don't need a credit card. Just my name, Leo. You'll get 2 months free when you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Take a break for the bottom of the hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. He's just around the corner. More tech coming. Stay here. You know, I'm amazed when I see a company paying ransomware, you know, like the hospitals or the police departments that get bit. I always am amazed. It's like, you guys don't have Versioning backup? What? What kind of IT department are you running there? Hey, Christophe.
Hello.
Comment ça va?
Ça va très, très bien.
Très, très bien. Where are you going
très
next?
Bien.
Where are you going next, you traveling man?
Greenland in August.
Oh! Now, Greenland really should have been named Iceland, right?
And Iceland should have been named Greenland.
Yeah, isn't that ironic? Man.
You're very right there. Well, we'll be on a ship, on a schooner, on a German-built three-mast schooner.
Oh, that's the one I want to go on.
Cruising well.
No, I can't. I can't. I want to, but I can't. I have duties.
We might be doing this again next year. Possibly.
That would be fun.
Got a whole lot of response.
One of these days I'm going to get on one of their workshops. I have to. All right, I'm plugging my Ethernet in here. Oh, crud. It's on the other side.
Oh, I'd be more than happy to have you, Leo. You know that.
Oh, it'd be fun. It'd be so much fun.
I think so, yep.
Well, we're going to take our chances and go to Russia in the fall. That'll be...
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's 3 days in St. Petersburg as part of this cruise.
Ooh, that's right.
Fun.
Well, we'll be in Siberia again in February.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Baikal, Lake Baikal.
Yeah, those are beautiful pictures. So you're going to do that one again?
We'll do that one again,
nice.
Yes. It's been so... Yeah, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And not just the location and the photo ops, also all your prejudice that you have about Russia kind of goes out the window the moment you're there, and you just realize what a beautiful culture it is, what amazing people
you don't
they
have
are.
To do that. No need to crawl, my friend. No need to crawl. You can just walk right in front of the camera. People do that, and I go, that's all. You don't need to crawl.
No, it was yeah.
I am a little nervous. I've been to St. Petersburg before. I went with Henry in, I want to say 2007, something like that. But I'm
quite nervous.
I don't know. Things are the world situation.
Oh, come on!
It's unstable.
No,
nothing to fear.
That's must be an American thing.
What?
Russia's bad.
Germans don't mind. They got to travel. They don't care. They're going everywhere.
Oh, I need a visa to go to Russia. It's the same ordeal that you have to go through.
Oh, you know what? I better check. I bet I do need a visa.
Well, it might be the tour operator or someone might be taking care of that for you. But
think about that. I forgot.
I needed an invitation from the tour operator, and then I had to go through. Well, you can go through a service and pay for someone doing the paperwork for you, and that's what I would do, actually.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Yeah,
just has to be done
deal.
In time.
I got to do that. I do have to do that.
But yeah, there's nothing intimidating about it whatsoever. It was really good. And the food, oh my God.
Really?
The Russians like their blini.
Love the blini. Got to love the blini. I like the borscht. Not so crazy about the potatoes and cabbage thing.
Oh, they do that too. That's right.
Yeah.
But a lot of sour cream with everything. Isn't
sour cream
nice?
Makes everything better. Sour cream and vodka, you could eat anything.
No bacon, but sour cream.
Okay.
I liked it. I really liked it.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. And we didn't get to the Hermitage because Henry got sick on our second day. And so this is going to be, But we have 3 days this time. So
okay, good.
We have a lot of stuff planned. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. Hey, it's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris joins us each and every week to talk about getting better pictures with our digital cameras. He is a photographer by trade. He also teaches great workshops. You'll find them at Discover the Top Floor, going back to Greenland, I guess, in a couple of... Well, next month. Next month,
August, we'll go back to Greenland on the three-mast schooner. Which is going to take us around the east coast of Greenland.
So you're going to be a pirate.
I'm going to be a pirate.
I'm taking pictures
on an eye patch.
All over the Greenland. Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. So what should we talk about today?
Well, last week I started this little series about secret superpowers. Your photo secret superpowers.
Yes.
We started with fireworks. We'll continue with panoramas today.
All right.
And it's one of those topics where I thought it doesn't belong here. I mean, you have an iPhone or a smartphone, and most even the compact cameras are very smart these days. They might just have that built in. From Norway, I sent a panorama that I took with the iPhone and put it online, and people started asking what camera that was because it looked so great. So these cameras are really good doing that.
It is amazing, isn't it? I see ads all the time for these special lenses you add to your iPhone. They say you don't have to carry a camera anymore. Just carry your phone.
Just shoot a panorama.
Okay, good.
It's gonna do the same thing. Well, it might help you with video, but a beautiful panorama. Smartphones are good, but if you want to try the what I call the advanced method, which would be with a bigger camera and taking individual shots and then putting them into a panorama. It turns into a two-step process. And pretty much step one is to capture the picture, and step two is to then stitch those pictures together. So that's what you do, and I just wanted to give a few tips on how to do that.
A lot of cameras now. My Sony will do this. My Leica will do this. You put it in
And they will stitch it for you.
Yeah,
even.
You put it in panorama mode. And it just says, move slowly across the horizon, and then you get it. And it usually does a very good job. The phone,
smartphone.
But
not everyone has these cameras, you know. Or if you have one of those big, big DSLRs and things, and there are still people that do that. So a few tips on how to do this in the old way, the traditional way, which also means the way where you have a bit more control, where you don't really have to rely on the camera doing everything for you and maybe not getting it 100% right. So the first thing is you want to hold the camera. Well, you want to take multiple shots. That's the first thing. You have to take multiple overlapping shots.
Okay.
You will hold the camera in portrait format so that you have more height in the picture. And then just take pictures with, I would say, about a 50% overlap. So don't give it too little overlap or the software will later not be able to get those pictures into one. Just won't find the overlapping areas. There are a few areas where you want to take control. When you shoot those individual pictures, the camera will do a few things automatically that can get in the way of the stitching later. The first is the white balance. The camera, every shot you do, the camera will try to get the colors right. But as different angles from where you shoot might have different light, there's a good chance that you have different shots with not the same white balance, and that makes it hard. So a manual white balance, step number one. That's the white balance are these little symbols on your camera, the little cloud or the little sun or the little fluorescent light. Set it to the actual light you're shooting under and leave it there for taking the panoramic pictures, and that will do it. Second thing is the focus. Now, if you have some of the things close, some of the things far away, the camera will focus on those. And then you have pictures with a different focus distance. And that will also kind of get in the way of the software later being able to stitch those together. So this is where you go manual focus. You choose what is important in the picture. You focus on that. And then all you do is set the camera to manual focus. And it will just stay there. And then you take all those pictures. And they will all nicely stitch together. And last but not least, the exposure. That's another thing. If you, let's say you shoot a picture, a series of pictures of a sunset, you will have a picture that is not pointing at the sun and then one where the camera is pointing at the sun. And those have a different light in them. And that means the camera will do different exposure on them. And then later, the software, again, will have a hard time stitching those together. So doing manual focus, it's a bit involved, but here's an easy trick to kind of get it right without knowing too much about it. And that's use the automatic setting in your camera and point at where you think which part of the panorama is kind of the most important one. And make a note of the values that the camera gives you for the shutter speed, the aperture, and the ISO. And then set your camera to manual mode. That's the M symbol. And then transfer those settings just there. And you have the manual setting for that panorama. And that's how you acquire those pictures. And then the second step is then stitching them together in software. And there's lots of software out there that will do this. I use Lightroom to do that. And it's called Photo Merge in Lightroom. And you just select the pictures that you want to merge into a panorama, right-click on them, and then select Photo Merge Panorama. And it will figure out, if you have enough overlap, it will figure out the sequence of the pictures that will kind of give you a preview of what the panorama will be looking like. It will even take care pretty good, actually, about take care of what we call ghosting. If you have, for example, people moving in between two shots inside that overlapping area, you will, with older stitching software, you might have a ghost in there, so a person that is just half visible. And the software is doing a pretty good job in taking care of this. And then...
Really? So like Photoshop, you won't get those ghosts, though? Because I always used to get those.
It's doing a pretty good job now. The algorithms have really improved, and then you're not really running into that anymore.
Used to be you had to do this all manually, too, right?
But And again, this is really an advanced version. So if you have a camera that does it for you, hey, do it. Let the camera do it.
That always
do a very good job. Yeah.
Yeah.
One last trick. If you do it with a multiple pictures version, I take marker pictures in the front and at the end. So, you know, when I come back home and I look at all these pictures on a light table in Lightroom, just finding those pictures that make up one panorama is kind of tough. Unless you have something in there that kind of reminds you that, oh, wait, this is where panorama starts and this is where it stops. And what I usually do is I do a thumbs up in front of the camera.
Oh.
When I start and another one at the end. And whenever I see a thumbs up, my own hand, probably quite out of focus, then I know that in between those two, that's a panorama.
Yeah. Or you could do like a frontwards L and a backwards L.
Well, I've seen people do this, like point to the side, like in the direction that we're. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how funny.
So there are lots of ways to do this, but some people take a picture of their feet, or I don't know.
The biggest challenge I have is I always forget to. If I'm not in manual mode, a lot of my times the camera will kind of be changing the lighting and all sorts of stuff. Do you say do it in manual mode, like set it once and do it all the way across, or?
That's what I typically do when I do that, because the stitching software will try to kind of even it out and equalize it between the different apertures, between the different frames. But it's easier if the camera kind of has a fixed value to work with.
Okay, okay. All right, panorama. You know, you could make a panorama for our assignment. It's not a panorama assignment, but there's always a time to, you know, could do panorama anytime. What is our assignment this month?
The current assignment is slow, and I think we'll have to take it slow and leave it up for another couple of weeks at least.
Are we not getting a lot of submissions? Is that why?
No. Oh, I think we only started it a couple of weeks ago. So
2 more weeks. So here's the deal. Take a picture. It doesn't have to be with a fancy camera. It doesn't have to be a panorama. It just has to illustrate the concept slow in some way. Tag it with the word slow and upload it to Flickr, and then send it over to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. In a few weeks, Chris will pick 3 interesting images. But we'll all see all of your images because it's kind of a fun group over there. So send us your best slow images. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, let's see. Let's install Antergos. Antergos. I tried to do it with ZFS and it didn't. It barfed. So I think I'm just going to have to do EXT4. It doesn't like... This was my concern with this laptop, is it's all this new stuff. But it sees the Wi-Fi right now, so that's nice. Is that Arch User Repository? I don't need Bluetooth. I do want the extra fonts. I do want Firefox. LibreOffice. Firewall. SMB. Yes, all of those. Thank you. Now, erase and encrypt. Let's use LVM. Maybe LVM will work. Didn't like ZFS. Select the drive. Oh, you know what? Maybe I... Oh, yeah, that's right. And I want the bootloader to be on. Let's just uncheck this here. Yeah, bootloader. Okay. I always like to encrypt the drive. Gonna use GNOME. I want to continue. save that. And there you go. Yeah, for some reason didn't like the ZFS. I guess with the NVMe, maybe it doesn't work together. I don't know. No, FreeBSD is not going to be for this laptop. It's going to be for my home. I don't think I want to use it here. I guess I could put it on here, but I'm thinking more like I want this beast at home. That's my main PC. A beast. Yarr. Well, don't you always want a boot partition? Is that, that's not Grub? I think, remember, I had problems with Grub 2 on this, but also. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Invitations went out this week to Samsung's event, August 2nd. What is that? A couple of weeks from Tuesday, something like that. That's when they're going to announce the new Galaxy Note. The Note is Samsung's very popular, surprisingly popular, really, giant screen phone. I love the Note. And I remember when I first started using it way back six versions ago, the original Note, people laughed at me. They said, that giant phone, you're crazy, you're carrying at it. That looks silly. And now it's so commonplace that it doesn't look big. It's a phone. And the reason I liked a big screen, I think people do like big screens, is because your smartphone isn't really just a phone. In fact, in many cases, it's barely just a phone. I don't spend much time on the phone. It's a communications device. It's a computer. It's a browser. It's a video viewer. So you want a big screen. You want to be able to see, I think, more on the screen. And, of course, the Note's famous because it has a stylus and a pressure-sensitive screen. So it's really a mini tablet, but very popular. And we expect that they will announce the new Note on August 2nd. I think they even said they'll announce the new Note. It will not be the Note 6, even though the last one was the Note 5. It's going to be the Note 7 because they want to get the numbers in sync. They have the Galaxy S7. That's their smaller handset. And for their bigger one, they want the Note 7. So that's what we expect the name will be. The rumors are 5.7-inch screen. It's going to have that edge. Samsung really sees that as a differentiator from the iPhone and everybody else, that kind of curved screen at the edge, which is very pretty. I mean, it is gorgeous. I have a Galaxy S7 Edge. You can get it in the normal model or the Edge model. I like the Edge. It's beautiful. But it doesn't have any real utility. They say, oh, we're going to put stuff on the side, like so you could put the phone on the table in front of you and still get messages and things sideways on the edge. I've always turned that off. It's kind of weird. And then it also is true that when you're holding the phone, it's hard not to touch the edge. There's so little material on the edge of the phone that you're almost inevitably going to touch the screen, and that gives you sometimes stray touches on the screen, which is not good. But it's so beautiful. You know, sometimes beauty is pain, and you just have to live with it. Pain for a beautiful phone. So I think that's the rumors. They'll do a curved edge screen. Unknown whether they'll do a straight screen. They probably will bring back, I hope they will bring back, the removable SD card. The rumor is the SD card will be back, as it is with the S7. That's nice, because then you can add lots of extra storage for your music and your pictures. And, you know, I listen to audiobooks. I have gigabytes of audiobooks. Now, I like to keep them on the SD card. I don't think it's going to have a removable battery, though. I think that's kind of the price we pay for thin, you know, glass, beautiful backs. If you have a removable battery, we have to have a pry-off plastic back. And I think Samsung doesn't want to do that anymore. Let's hope the battery life is sufficient. A lot of times this giant screen uses a lot of juice. I notice on my S7, though, they've seemed to have made some progress. The S7 screen doesn't use hardly any of the juice. You know, when I look at the battery life on the S7, usually the screen, which on other phones might be 40, 50, or 60% of the overall battery usage, on the Galaxy S7, it's like 4%, 5%, 10%. It's very parsimonious with the juice sucking. Isn't that what we're looking for, is parsimonious juice sucking? I think so. I don't know. It just seems to me every phone should be that way. It will not be a giant battery, according to the rumors, but maybe it'll be enough with the changes they've made. I wonder if it'll have nougat the new Android. Probably not. Probably be Marshmallow. Android Nougat is supposed to come out later this year with the new Nexus phones from Google. Anyway, we'll find out more in a couple of weeks. Just thought I'd pass that along. If you've been waiting, because I know a lot of you have come around and become Note fans. I love it. I love a big screen. And, of course, 5.7 inches would make it one of the biggest screens out there. The iPhone 6S Plus is 5.5 inches. That's nice. Google did make a 6-inch phone, the Nexus 6. That was a little big. Just a third of an inch smaller. That's good. A little 6 is a little too big. It felt kind of funny with that one. Isn't that funny? I think there's a sweet spot, right about 5.7 inches. Apparently, that's what Samsung thinks, too. Back to the phones we go. Richard, up the road a piece in Sonoma, California. Hello, Richard.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I would go see a band named Parsimonious Juice Sucking.
Okay. Well, let's form that band.
I think that would be an awesome band. I don't know what the music would be.
I have no
a headbanger for me, but I think I'd still like
it. Might be industrial, kind of, you know, like chainsaws and
could be too many pipes banging
cement
on rhythm
mixers.
No,
yeah.
I'm not sure. So I have a Nexus 9. Well, I'll put it in sad voice.
Yeah, that's the tablet. Well, and they're nice tablets, but apparently Google doesn't want to make them anymore.
I signed up for the beta program to load N.
Uh-oh.
I did everything. I updated correctly.
Uh-oh.
And now it can't get past Google.
Oh, dear.
It's just locked up on Google. Brick City?
Well, no. Oh, no. It's never Brick City. Never Brick City.
I love that attitude. This is why I'm
calling you. No, never Brick City. I put N on my Nexus 6. Or, I'm sorry. Okay. My friend Jeff put it on his Nexus 6. I put it on my 6P, the newer Nexus. And I've been using it. And it works great. I like it a lot. Now, I don't remember, but I'm sure the Nexus 9, their tablet, was rated. You wouldn't have been able to do it, probably, if it wasn't approved.
Well, part of what stimulated me to do it is I heard Ron on All About Android. He did it to his 9.
Okay.
And was very happy. So I followed suit.
Uh-huh.
And here I am.
Well, remember our boilerplate, but still to be heated warning that, you know, it's beta software and your mileage may vary. There is a way to go into recovery mode and get out of this. So that's what I would do. I'm just going to quickly check to see, but you could Google Nexus 9 recovery mode. Generally,
I'm looking at the screen that says recovery mode.
Oh, good.
I think you engage it by going to, you know, power and volume down.
Right.
And when I do that and I choose recovery, I'll do it in real time. And wouldn't it be just wonderful if you were the healing moment that caused this to happen?
Yeah.
That when I do that, it just goes to back and is stuck at Google.
So the first thing to do when you get to that recovery is to wipe the cache and data.
Oh, okay.
There are, you know, what you're getting is a recovery menu, and there are several things. I'm not sure. The problem, of course, is if you've corrupted your software. Basically, by the way, it's a computer. So you have an operating system, and the operating system loads. Recovery mode is a bootloader that loads first and that lets you, you know, choose the operating system to load. I'm not sure on how you would recover this. You probably, what you want to do is download. Here's what you're going to need to do. It's kind of a pain. You got a Windows machine lying around?
Put a gun to my head. No. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So you're gonna download the drivers so you can do an ADB, and you're going to download the Nexus 9 factory image, and you're going to connect it and restore it. That's the short form because I just ran out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now, hold on, because we may have a better idea. So, is there apply rescue over the air to a Nexus 9? Can you do that? Is there a over the air rescue?
Well, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, that would be the way to do it, and that's how Macs do it, which is so cool.
And
which is that you can OTA rescue Nexus 9. Let me see. I need Ron here.
I have a stunningly positive story about somebody with a Chromebook that actually booted into Chrome and went to what we shall call, oh, we're off air, an adult site.
Yeah.
And when he did, he got one of those pop-up windows saying, call this number, Microsoft, rah, 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 alert, danger, danger.
Oh, God, that's funny.
And he actually did, and when he called it, because he didn't call me first, and when he did, they said, what machine are you on? And he said, a Chromebook. And he said there was a long pause, and the guy said, close the Chromebook for 30 minutes and we'll call you back. and he called me, and I had him do power wash,
that's
and he's back to
funny.
Gold.
Of course he is.
I love Chromebooks.
He probably didn't even need to do the power wash. That was just some pop-up.
Yeah. I thought it was a good
idea. Yeah, no, it's not. You know, that's the beauty of it. No harm, no foul. Your stuff is safe. You just run the power wash.
I try to get all my friends to be on Chromebooks because...
Yeah, well, you hear me doing that.
I know.
And I know it bugs Windows users especially. Yeah, yesterday I said Windows is a virus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I...
I heard
you know,
that.
Yeah.
That was great. Oh, my God, I want that as a T-shirt.
I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, and it's not really aimed at the normal person who can, you know, who's a gamer or has an IT department or can figure it out. It's aimed at people like your buddy who get that pop-up and believe it.
Well, he called them. He actually called them, and I thought, my God, you could have been in such trouble if you'd been on, a machine.
Yeah. Somebody's saying, Dr. Ma, I don't know if this is true. Let's see. I think what you want is you want to put the restore software, the fastboot program on your Windows machine. Then you connect it up via USB. You're going to need to download a Nexus 9 stock image, which is Google puts online at developers.google.com. Make sure you get it from Google.
Yeah.
And then you just blast it on there. You're never really, unless you have a hardware failure, which is possible. That thing is older now.
Yeah.
But presuming that you didn't have a hardware failure, you're never really far from restoring it. It would be nice to do an over-the-air restore, and I don't see that you can do that.
I've tried all of the options on the the restore screen of, you know, either recovery or factory reset. But still, it just ends up stopping at Google.
XDA developers, I'm looking, has a post at the forum there. OTA update, brick your Nexus 9. Google now provides OTA images, which is what you want, and they can sideload it onto your device. And there's a step-by-step on here.
Okay.
Marshmallow hose your device, flash the NDEV preview. I think you should probably try the NDEV again. I think... that you just got a bad install. It is conceivable and somewhat coincidental, but this is when these happen, that there's a hardware failure.
Right.
But I'd probably not. Probably not. You should probably be able to fix it.
It did actually make me go out and score on Craigslist and NVIDIA Shield, which I love.
I love the video for TV or
no,
the
just
tablet?
Just the regular Shield.
Well, now there you go. How much did you pay for the Shield?
With the gaming console, I scored it at the right place at the right time for $150.
Nice. And that's actually a much faster, better tablet in many respects.
And it's a great, I love the form factor. It's
a
perfect mix between the 7 and the 9.
Good. Well, so it's not the end of the world,
No, but it is annoying to have
it should work.
I love the 9. Love the 9 for looking at my photographs.
Yeah.
That's really what I love it for, is looking at imagery.
Yeah. Well, you should be able to get that going.
Okay, so developers.google.com, download, sideload.
Yeah, I would go to the XDA developers site, and you just, if you Google, XDA-developers.com, that's a really good place with step-by-step instructions for all this stuff.
Cool. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. See ya.
Bye.
Okay, this isn't working, but I'm going to get it working. I'm still using this Nexus 7. This is my timer. Which I love. The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by ZipRecruiter. I kind of want to reach out to the person who is doing hiring, whether you're a sole proprietor and it's all on your shoulders, or you work at an HR department, whatever your situation is, you know that hiring is the single most important thing you do at your company. The employees you hire can make you or break you. You can hire a great employee who's going to transform your business. You can hire a terrible employee that is just going to cause problems down the road. The key is to get that right person. and to figure out how that, you know, where that right person is, how to reach that right person. This is a challenge because, well, there's the internet, of course, that's good news, but the problem is that there's hundreds of job boards, and that right person could be only on one of them. That's why I love ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter posts to 100-plus job boards with a single click of the mouse, and not just job boards, Facebook and Twitter, too. So you have the highest possible chance of reaching that perfect person. And they make it easy for you, too, because, of course, you're going to get a lot of applications when you're on all those job boards, but they don't come to your phone. They don't come to your inbox. They come to the ZipRecruiter interface, where it's easy to rank all of the candidates, screen out the ones that don't work, and hire the right person fast. ZipRecruiter is used now by over 800,000 businesses. More than 131 million candidate applications have been delivered. It's easy. It's the way to find the right person in any city, any industry, anywhere in the country. And with their unique mobile apply process, it'd be much easier for you to reach people, more visitors, more applicants, because they could do it on their phone. I love it. You can quickly screen candidates with real-world questions using free-form, multiple-choice, or yes-or-no formats. You can view their responses in conjunction with their resumes formatted just for you. You can rate them and hire the right person fast. ZipRecruiter, we used it to hire most recently a new editor, and we love it. We love it. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Hire the right person fast. It makes your life easier, makes your company better. And it's really affordable. In fact, we've got it for you for free if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That's my phone number. Let's see. Going on with the show, and Stana in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hello, Stana.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Hey, we have a Time Warner cable, and I found out that Charter bought them out, so I don't know if any like changes are coming out and about, but I ended up getting rid of my TV and keeping my internet.
You're what's called a cord cutter.
Yeah.
Even though there's still a cord.
Yeah.
There's always a cord.
So I still want to get some cable channeled, so I'm wondering what the best route to go is. I was looking at a Roku, and I know there's like an Apple TV and an Amazon Fire Stick and stuff, so I'm wondering what the best route to go is.
Yeah, this is a transitional period right now, going from paying for cable service and getting all your stuff through the cable company to getting everything through the internet. They call it over the top, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. But from the cable company's point of view, instead of going through them to get your content, you're going over their heads and getting it through the internet. And all of the boxes you mentioned really are very simply a way to connect your TV to the internet. The problem is that some of the stuff you want isn't on the internet. So, for instance, your local news, you know, from your local TV, you know, your Channel 4 news is probably not on the internet. And this means, especially for live events like the Academy Awards and the Super Bowl, you're not going to be able to, a lot of sporting events, watch them if you don't have your local stations. Now,
well, I do have the local stations.
See, that's, if you get them over the air, is that what you're getting?
I still have, the house is still wired up with a regular coaxial cable, so I got to use a cable modem for the internet.
Yeah.
So I just plug the TV into it, and I'm still, with that, I'm getting all the regular...
Do you have an antenna?
Stations. I do not know.
Well, so you do have it, then you're getting some sort of cable...
So you haven't
cut the cord entirely. You're just getting basic cable, maybe.
I really wouldn't call it cable because it's all your standard.
Yeah, it's basic.
Like
it's what
ABC,
they,
NBC.
Yeah, so it's basic cable, yeah. So,
oh, okay.
So that's easiest. You're still paying the cable company for Internet Plus TV.
Yes.
But you're paying less, you're getting basic cable, and you're getting your locals. And that solves a lot of problems. So that's one way to do it. If you live near enough a city to have an antenna, that's another way to do it. You can get those locals over the air. And that solves the real problem, because now you're wondering, well, how do I watch, well, I don't know, Game of Thrones maybe, or Showtime. And both HBO and Showtime, the premium networks, do offer their services over the top. You have to pay them for that. So HBO, for instance, has two apps that'll run on your Roku or your Amazon TV or your Apple TV. One's called HBO Go and one's called HBO Now. This is very confusing. Thank you, HBO, for making this so confusing. HBO Go is for people who are already paying the cable company for their HBO service.
And okay, I gotcha.
And now what you do when you launch HBO Go is you log into your cable company. You'll log into the Charter website. They'll verify, if they choose to, and by the way, in, at least with Comcast, that sometimes they don't choose to. They only recently said, oh, okay, you can use HBO Go on a Roku. So if they choose to, they'll allow it. Then the HBO Go will have all of your HBO shows without paying for it, because you're already paying for it with Comcast or Charter or Time Warner. HBO Now is their over-the-top service, and I think it's, I want to say, $10 or $14 a month. And then you don't have to have cable service. You're paying HBO directly. This is how HBO would like to do it, by the way, because the cable company takes a chunk of it, right? They'd love to offer it over the internet to you, but they're in a kind of a pickle because they don't want to annoy the cable companies, because still, for most of their subscribers, that's how they see HBO. They're not yet all internet. So we're in this weird transition phase where companies like HBO and Showtime really love the idea of selling directly to you because they get more of the pie, but they're reluctant to annoy the cable companies, so they kind of have to.
Channels I'm looking to get are more like the news channels, so like CNN, Fox News,
right.
MSNBC, stuff like that.
Yeah, and so some of them do that. For instance, CBS just launched their own app for iPhones that has a live component that has much of the local, I mean, the national CBS stuff on it. CNN, you can use their app to watch CNN. And so for that, the best way to do it is, what kind of phone do you have? Do you have an iPhone or an Android phone?
Android.
Okay.
A Galaxy.
If you had an iPhone, it's very easy because you can, if you have an Apple TV, you could take anything that you're watching on your phone, including CNN, and put it on your television through the Apple TV using AirPlay. On Android, they use something called Chromecast. This is a $35 doohickey. It has an HDMI port.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Everybody should have one, because especially if you have an Android phone or an Android tablet, because you plug it into your TV, and then, and this depends on the app. Some apps are Chromecast enabled. I can't remember if the CNN app is or not. I think it is. So then you launch the CNN app, you start watching CNN on your phone, and then you Chromecast it. You say, okay, now put it on my TV. And that's the same as watching live CNN.
Okay.
Fox may do this as well. So again, this is over the top, and they, you know, they have mixed feelings about this because they don't want to annoy the cable companies, right? And in fact, sometimes their contracts prohibit this, but where they can, they will, because they want to. They ultimately know we're going to get a bigger chunk of the pie if we do it this way.
I got a little more to add to the mix then.
Okay.
I also have a shop, which is at another location, and we need to have TV, internet, phone over there. So I'm paying for all of that over there, but they allow us to, like, log on to certain, like, stations and actually view them live, but not all of them. It's only a select. So
right.
I'm able to do that here. So I guess
That's because you pay for business class service.
Yeah, it's an arm and a leg to pay.
It's a lot more because you're in a business, yeah.
Yeah.
You never want to pay that price. But I guess because you're paying so much, they're going to have to they give you a little concession. Yeah, we're going to, you know, there's things like, you know, there's different services that you can get that will allow you. There's, for instance, ESPN and Disney Channels are on Sling TV. You can pay $10 a month and get that. Fox may be on that. But the problem is it's all scattershot. Like, well, you got to get that app and this app, and you're going to have this device and that device. We're in a transitional phase where it's really ugly.
Okay.
So
I guess what would be the best device to get? Because I go, you have the Roku, you have Amazon.
I think Roku is the best. The only thing that the Roku doesn't do is iTunes. So if you bought or rent TV and movies and music on the Apple iTunes store, it doesn't sound like you do, then an Apple TV is the only way you can watch it because Apple wants you to be all Apple. If you're not in the Apple ecosystem, Roku is easily the best choice. It has the most channels, the most variety. I like Roku, and I like the technology that you're using. I have them all. In my living room, I've got 8 boxes all connected to the TV. It's crazy.
So how is the Roku different from the Chromecast?
There is a difference. The Roku is a standalone device that does it all. The Chromecast, you use your phone to send the video over to the Chromecast, and then the Chromecast takes over and plays it. But it has no interface. You have to use the phone or the tablet to control the Chromecast. It also has more limited choices. I'd get both, frankly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. We're exciting times for Internet TV. Sometimes they call it IPTV because IP stands for Internet Protocol. The idea that all of your stuff should come over the Internet. You might get your Internet from a cable company, but you might get it from some other source. But the point is that you don't need to be paying the cable company for content. Pay the content creators for content. The content creators love this idea. Cable company, not so much. But they know it's coming. They understand that. And so you see what they've been doing. They've been slowly raising the cost of internet so that, let's say you pay them, as I do, because I buy, all the cable package and the internet package. And it's about $100 a month. It's a lot, isn't it? I don't like to think about it, but once you do it, it kind of is on your credit card. You don't think about it. They would love to, they know they're going to lose my HBO subscription and my TV subscription. So they want to get the internet up to about $100 a month so that they don't lose money. That's going to be a challenge. They've got it pretty close, though. I think it's $60 a month without TV. So they're getting there. And they've been doing this over a period of time because they know this is the future. People are going to be getting everything over the internet. And they have kind of a monopoly, right? There's only one cable company in town. There's usually only one phone company in town. And those are your two choices for internet access. It's not like you got 80 choices. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We go to Tony in Woodland Hills, California, our next call. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've got this Windows 7 laptop, and I would like to replace the current drive with an SSD and then do a dual boot with Windows 10. Would that be possible?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you have a couple of ways to do this. First thing I would do is just replace your drive. And what you're going to want to do is there's a couple of things you can do. When you buy a new hard drive, the company that sells the hard drive, Western Digital, Seagate, Samsung, because you're probably going to buy a Samsung SSD,
right,
they'll offer a program for copying, sector copying, they call it, the contents of the old drive to the new drive. So is it a laptop or a desktop?
A laptop.
And a little more complicated because most laptops can only have one drive at a time. On a desktop, you'd put the new drive in, but you wouldn't make it the boot drive. You'd run the program, copy the old drive over to the new, then take out the new drive and let it boot to the – or take out the old drive rather than let it boot to the new drive. On a laptop, it's a little harder. It might be easier just to reinstall Windows 7, put the new drive in and reinstall it, back up your data. You could also, if you wanted to, get an external drive, do an image copy of your laptop hard drive.
Actually, I would prefer to do a clean install as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So once you do that, once you've got the new drive in and Windows 7 is running, then you want to do the Windows 10 upgrade. And now you want to do this before July 29th. The upgrade is free until July 29th.
So, right.
So you want to hurry on this because Microsoft's going to start charging you after that. They're pretty clear.
Okay.
There's not going to be a you know, a grace period. That's it. So you'll want to do the Windows 10 upgrade. And in the install process, you can it'll say, I see Windows on here. And it'll give you the chance to do a dual boot.
I see.
So that's probably the easiest way to do it. You could also, it's a laptop, so yeah, you really, unless your laptop can support two drives. I was going to say you could keep the old drive.
No, it cannot.
Yeah. So yeah. If you Google, and I would Google Windows 10 dual boot, there's going to be some useful information, things to watch out for, pitfalls. I'm looking at an article from PC World that says you can dual boot Windows 7 with Windows 10, but there's a catch. So you're going to want to read, that's Lincoln Spector's article. You're going to want to read the details about this, and he has a step by step. It's not as immediately a clear. What you want to basically do is use the disk management utility to create a new partition, a new blank partition, and install Windows 10 on that.
Okay. Now, will I be able to update Windows 7? It's not going to expire after I get Windows 10?
No, it does not expire. Nope.
Okay.
So they understand, Microsoft understands that there are plenty of people that will want to have both for compatibility reasons.
Right.
And so, and absolutely. No, they could, as long as Windows 7 has not reached end of life, they will continue to update that forever.
Okay, sounds great.
And the thing to understand now, and Satya Nadella has said this, the CEO of Microsoft recently, just a couple of days ago, he says, we now see Windows not as a desktop operating system, but as a software service. And that's kind of a, in Silicon Valley, that has meaning. To normal people, it's like, what? I don't, what's the difference? But what, so let me translate the geek speak. What he's essentially saying is, we don't really see ourselves in the business of selling Windows 10 and, you know, doing next, as we have been in the past, every few years. Now there's Windows 11. Then in a few years, there's Windows 12. And then you slowly cut off the older versions and move. No, this is it. Microsoft sees the world is changing to such a degree that the idea of buying a new operating system every 4 years is no longer makes sense. It's not going to be, mark my words, they won't be calling it Windows 10 in a few years. It'll just be Windows, and it will be permanently updated. That's it. You're done. And you'll get free upgrades for life, and there won't be another version of Windows until, you know, there's a new CEO and Microsoft changes course or something like that. But I don't anticipate that. Because really, the whole idea of selling and making money on an operating system has changed. Microsoft sees itself now as what they call a devices and services company. That's, if you go to Microsoft.com, it says that at the top of the page. We're a devices and services company. The devices are the Surface Book and the Surface Pro and this Windows Phone to some degree, I guess, still. And the services are the cloud services, Azure and Office 365 and Windows. And I think that they really see this as the future. For instance, if you buy Office now, most likely you won't buy a copy of Office. You won't go to the store as you used to, go down to Staples and get a big box for $800, and that's Office. You'll subscribe to Office 365. You'll pay $8 to $20 a month, and that's it. You're done. Every month you'll pay that, and there's no new version because it's just automatically updated forever. Software, they call it SaaS, software as a service. And Microsoft's wanted to do this for years. They love the idea of a subscription annuity. It's not bad for us because if you think about how expensive Windows used to be and how expensive Office used to be, the idea of a monthly fee is preferable. And I don't think they're going to charge a monthly fee for Windows if you jump on this Windows 10 upgrade now. You don't, by the way, if you're saying, I don't want Windows 10, still do it. Do the upgrade, then roll back to your previous version of Windows, Windows 7 or 8.1. Roll back. But now you've authenticated, you've made Windows 10 be part of your computer system, and you can do it now. You can get Windows 10, download it, and put it on there anytime from now on. Do that before the 29th. This is it. Your last chance to get it for free. 12 days left. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Thanks to Nathan Staton, our musical director, baton in hand, with some of the best music. I just love the bumper music he picks. Also to Kim Schaffer, our phoner. She answers the phones, grooms you, prepares you for your appearance on national radio like Tom in St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Leo. How are you? I've been a long-time listener since 1998 and a little program called Screensavers.
Oh, my, my. The good old days. You know, yes, we do the new Screensavers now. It's not quite as good, I have to admit, but it's pretty good.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And I want to thank you for your time and trouble devoted towards educating the public out here with computers and TVs and such, which leads me to my question for you.
Sure.
I'm in the same spot as a previous caller who is trying to cut the cable and probably have progressed a little bit farther than her. My sons and I have installed, I guess it's an app called Kodi on my Fire TV.
Love it. Used to be Xbox Media Center, XBMC, but they renamed it Kodi, K-O-D-I.
Right. And my question is, knowing the way the world works, how does Kodi generate income and the streaming apps that go with it?
Kodi's an open source project. A lot of people are baffled by this notion of programmers working for free, but they do it, and they do it not for free. They do it not for money, but for other things like glory and recognition, and sometimes because they care and they just want it badly enough. Sometimes because they, get jobs out of it. But that's one of the beauties of the entire open source movement. And it wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for Linus Torvalds, a Finnish graduate student back in 1992, who wrote a Unix-like operating system. He called it Linus's Minix or Linux. And he gave it away, kept the copyright, but gave it away. But the other thing that was really critical to this was the internet, the advent of the internet, and the ability for programmers from all over the world to work together on a project without being in the same room. And Linux, you know, inspired a lot of people to write new software. The Free Software Foundation took advantage of this, you know, sudden growth in interest in this. And now there's free software everywhere. And I think in the long run, this is kind of the future. I really do. More and more, you're using, whether you know it or not, free software. Even Macintosh is based on a foundation of free software.
And I'm guessing the same could be said about Exodus, the app that attaches itself to Kodi, and those other streaming apps.
In many cases, yeah. Now you'll notice on the Kodi website, there's a donate button, and I think people often will give money. I do for open source projects, I should say, that I use a lot. If they ask for donations, I often do that. But it's not required. It's not necessary. There are other ways to make money in open source. For instance, I bet you some of the Kodi developers make money building Kodi systems, integrating Kodi systems, supporting Kodi systems, things like that. A lot of the Kodi plugins, though, are just written by fans. We have a Kodi plugin for my podcast network, Twit. I don't even know the guy who wrote it. He just wrote it because he wanted it. And then he put it up on the website so people could download it. So right. it's hard. I know it's hard to believe in this day and age that people would do things out of altruism just because they feel like it. But they do. And okay. God bless them for it.
And which brings me to my second question, I guess. If I know with every good, there must be some bad. And I've been looking on the internet and finding out what a VPN is. And is it necessary for me to get that?
Necessary is a strong word. If you use Wi-Fi in public on Wi-Fi access points, or if you use networks as you travel at a hotel, on a cruise ship, you're somewhat vulnerable because you're on a public network that bad guys could get onto and try to take advantage of. There are ways and ways they can take advantage of it. It's not necessarily that they can spy on you, although if you're not sending encrypted traffic, they can. But also they can trick you. They could put up fake access points. They could see what access points you're using and then set up a fake one and get you to sign into it or your machine to sign into it without your knowledge, start using it, become a man in the middle. So what a VPN does is it sets up a connection between your computer on a public access network and a computer somewhere else run by a trusted party, the VPN provider, or you, by the way, you can run your own VPN. Businesses often run VPNs. It stands for Virtual Private Network. That's where they really started, was businesses would set up a VPN so their employees could log in from off-site and be on the corporate network and do so securely. So all the data that's transmitted over a VPN is encrypted, so it's not visible to anybody else on that network. It also kind of protects your machine. In fact, what I use is a VPN hardware device so that the bad guy not only can't see my traffic, they can't even see my machine. They only see the VPN router. I use something called the Tiny Hardware Firewall. You can find it at tinyhardwarefirewall.com. And it's just it's like a little hardware router that does the VPN. And that works quite well in terms of security. Do you need it? Is it necessary? Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that. I've lately become more concerned about the dangers posed by using public networks. But most of what we do is innocuous. If you're doing something important like banking or using a credit card, chances are you're doing it on a secure network. Email, if you're using Gmail, for instance, it's secure. So I just be judicious about what you do in public. And if you really want to be safe, and I do this, by the way, I'd use a VPN, yeah.
Okay, and so you're saying that if you have a home network, that it might not necessarily be...
No, you're all right. The only person that can spy you on your home network is your internet service provider. People use VPNs for that, too, by the way. Some internet service providers are better than others. Some of them spy on you, for want of a better word. And they have it. They have the best... By the way, people worried about Google. Don't worry about Google. Worry about your ISP. That's the biggest danger. They can see everything you're doing. They can track everywhere you go. So people who are worried about their ISPs use VPNs often, and that prevents your ISP from knowing what you're doing on the internet. Otherwise, your ISP does know.
Okay, and as a footnote, I don't need to talk about Cody in closets and whisper about it because of...
No, Cody's legal.
Okay.
Cody's legal. Now, you can put BitTorrent on it, and that's legal. But it can be used to do illegal things, download pirated movies. That would be illegal. So BitTorrent itself is not illegal. Kodi is certainly not illegal. But you can do things that violate... Illegal is a harsh word. Let's say violate copyright, which is illegal.
And I guess the reason I have this attitude is because I feel if I'm not paying for it, it must be illegal.
I know. Nope. You're doing it. You're relying on the kindness of strangers. They, programmers are an interesting breed. Very often, they just do things for the challenge of it, because they love it, for the reputation, and they just enjoy doing it. I used to, when I was a younger man, write software, and I gave it all away, because I didn't want to make money on it. I just wanted to do good. That's fine. That's great. You'll see more of that in time, I think.
And I guess that's what Windows Corporation, Windows 10 being free is what they're aiming
at. No, that's a different kind of free. That's free as in free beer. Like, you don't have to pay for it. I'm talking free as in liberated. It also happens in many cases to be free as in beer. But free as in freedom. And that's the idea of free software, is that no corporation, often no government entity can see what you're doing. You can see what the code is doing. You can modify it for your own use. That is really, I think, the future of software. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the show. I hate it when that happens. Well, I'll be back next week with more. And, you know, all week long, I talk obsessively about technology on our podcast network, This Week in Tech. TWIT. You can find it on the web at twit.tv. It's also on iTunes and, you know, everywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Twit. I'm the Chief Twit. By the way, that's my Pokemon Go handle. If you see me in a gym, a Pokestop, say hi. Kevin in LA, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? I've been listening for many years, listen most weekends, and I love the show.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I have a question for you about a GoFundMe campaign that I'm about to launch. I'm a UC Santa Barbara film major.
Okay.
And I'm in, just about to start my senior year, but I've enrolled in the study abroad program. And basically, I'm going to Royal Holloway London University for my senior year.
Congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. It's like a lifelong dream for me to study abroad.
Do they have a good film school there?
They do. They have a great film media department.
Nice.
Yeah. So the cool thing is that I'm actually covered on everything through grants and scholarships and loans once I'm there. It's the getting there that I'm launching this GoFundMe campaign for, and it's basically, you know, everything I need to do to get there, you know.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's not cheap getting a visa and the flight and, you know, taking care of candidates fees and this and that and everything in order to get over there, you know. So I thought, hey.
Why not? Now, this is a whole new category of internet stuff called crowdfunding. The idea, and Kickstarter does it. Generally, companies that are creating products will use Kickstarter to raise money to make a product. And there's never a guarantee on Kickstarter that the money will buy anything. You're just taking a chance. That's important to say because I think sometimes people think it's a store. It's not. Nor is it an investment. You don't get shares in the company when you give them money on Kickstarter. But sometimes you can get some pretty cool stuff. And you get the good feeling that you're helping it out. The problem with, of course, Kickstarter is they're limited to companies. They're limited to, they're pretty restrictive on who can use it. So other sites have emerged, CrowdRise and so forth, Patreon for creators, podcasters, and musicians, and GoFundMe for anybody who just wants to put a page together to raise money. They call it crowdfunding for anyone. And the range of GoFundMe projects is quite big. I mean, a lot of times it's medical bills. Sometimes it's something like you. It's for educational purposes. And I think, you know, it's fun to go there. And if you've got a couple extra bucks, you know, to go there and help somebody out is great. You know, my suggestion is certainly create the site. There's no reason not to. Don't expect strangers probably to kick in because they don't know you, Kevin, and they don't have much investment in your success in the film business. But I would certainly let everybody know that you're doing this and hope that family and friends will kick in a buck or two and help you do it. I think it's a great idea. There's, you know, I would certainly do it. A lot of these, it doesn't have to be charitable. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be a lot of different reasons. Here's somebody who wants to raise money for their dog that needs a surgery. In fact, you see a lot of pets on there. Attorney's fees, cancer treatment, you know, birthday adventure. There's a lot of stuff on here. That's part of the problem is there's a lot of stuff on there. There's literally thousands and thousands of people are using GoFundMe to raise money right now. They have raised a lot of money. They say $2 billion to date. So the key is going to be for you to get get the word out to family and friends. I wouldn't count on donations from strangers, although you never know. There are people who, if you write a compelling story, maybe Steven Spielberg will see it and say, "Yeah, I think this kid's got something here. I'm going to kick in $1,000." He was once just
my fingers.
He was once a struggling film student too, right?
Right.
What's the? Have you set the page up?
I did set it up. Yeah, and I spent some time editing it yesterday.
So people were listening. Can find it. What should I search for?
Search for Kevin Dorian, Dorian, or Getting to Royal Holloway.
I love it. Okay, nice. In fact, I hope you, how much money do you think you're going to need to raise?
Well, my target, figuring in fees, because I think they charge about 8% that goes directly to GoFundMe, I'm putting it at $5,000.
Wow, that's quite a bit. They take a big chunk.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was when I signed up and started creating the page, but then I found out, so I was like, okay, maybe I should tell people about this.
Yeah.
I'm looking at raising about $4,500 that will actually get me there. Once I'm there, I'm good. I love UC Santa Barbara for their financial aid department for, helping me out. And, it's actually believe it or not, it's costing me $5,000 less in student loan debt to go there for my senior year than it is to study on campus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what really breaks my heart is when I see people go into such great debt for their education, debt that they may never be able to pay off, or it'll certainly take them decades to pay off. Education is such a great thing, and I just we've got to find a way to make it more widely available, because it's the single most important thing a nation can do for its young people is to give them opportunity. And education is a big part of that. So, well, I wish you good luck. I wish you good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Leo. Everybody, if anybody wants to help Kevin out, GoFundMe.com. Help him make his way to Royal Holloway. Candy is in Palmdale. I think our last caller of the day. Hi, Candy.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you? Oh, don't be nervous.
Well, from the first girl I have, I live in my motorhome now, and I need to get some. I just got Amazon TV, but I don't know how to do everything else. But my main just keeps crashing, and I computer.
Oh boy, the phone is cutting out. So you got a new laptop, and it keeps crashing?
Yes, I use this program called Adapt to Make Pictures to make good pictures of my dog.
Oh.
When
you say crash, what happens? What kind of crash?
It says that crashed, and it erases all everything I've done.
So it's not the computer that's crashing, just that program.
Yes,
actually. Windows isn't crashing. You can keep going.
Yes.
So it could be that program is not a great program. What's the name of it? I didn't catch it.
It's called PIZAP, P-I-Z-A-P. And I was going to ask, you know of one I could use that I could cut out things and put them on there?
Yeah, there are. I don't know that program, to be honest with you. There are a lot of photo editing programs, many of them for free. Where do you store your photos? On Google Photos, for instance?
Well, I heard a storm right now because I just got, this new computer. Oh, I got a drive that you download.
Do you have internet access?
Yes, I do.
Try Aviary. It's free. It's online. Aviary. It's a photo editing service that's quite good. I really like it, and it's free. I think you will like it, and it won't crash. And even if it does, you'll have a copy on the net. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.